Good evening. I'm calling this meeting to order. This is the Joint Committee on Student Success Subcommittee on Revenue, February 26th. This is an informational meeting. We have invited another group to make a presentation to us this evening, and then we are going to have some more background information provided by Legislative Revenue, and the committee will have a discussion. So I'm opening the informational meeting. Oregon Revenue Roundtable has been invited to speak, so please come up. I think you're all pretty familiar with the protocol that as you speak, you introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson and Co-Chair Senator Haas. My name is Iris Hodge. I'm with the organization called Main Street Alliance. We're a network of about 4,000 small business owners from across the state of Oregon, and we're very happy to be part of the Oregon Revenue Roundtable. We're going to present in three parts, and I'll start it off. Are you ready? So here on our first slide, you'll see the list of the Oregon Revenue Roundtable participants. These are all community-based organizations, unions, business organizations, and many more who first met back in June 2018. The roundtable members met to identify our shared principles, educate ourselves about tax and revenue policy, and prepare some policy options for the 2019 legislative session. Here are the organizations that elected to be listed as participants on our roundtable proposals document, but an additional nearly equal number of groups were involved in the development as well. Next slide, please. You all have heard plenty over the last year about the need for increased investment in Oregon's education system, so we won't review that in detail again. But we do believe investing billions more in Oregon schools is absolutely crucial. For small business owners, we believe that it's easier to recruit skilled workers when we're investing in our education systems here at home. And we need to be investing in education to prepare for tomorrow's small business owner as well. It's absolutely accurate that our business taxes are low compared to other states, as has already been described in detail as well. And we would add a few additional reasons why now is the time to revise Oregon's tax system.
Slide four. Yeah.
It's also the case that many businesses are doing well right now, while others are still struggling. Nationally, the profits of C corporations, many of which are the biggest businesses in the world, are near a record high as the share of national income. My colleague will discuss some solutions like complete reporting and other concepts to address these issues. Main Street Alliance businesses are still unable to find the capital they need to grow their businesses and provide their employees with the benefits they need to compete with these very large corporations. I'm going to hand it off to my colleague.
Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Bob Estabrook for the Oregon School Employees Association. We represent about 22,000 Oregon educators from Head Start through K-12 and up into community colleges. And I think one of the things that is very apparent to our members, as you can see on this slide, is that while the average Oregonian, you'll notice there's actually a flat line at the bottom of that graph representing median income over time. Essentially, your average Oregonian has not seen progress in terms of their financial well-being over the 35 years shown here, while at the same time, the top tenth of 1% are doing extremely well. And I think that will not necessarily come as a surprise to anyone. If you talk to one of the school bus drivers or educational assistants that I represent, that they understand this dynamic is playing out, even if they couldn't put the specific numbers to it. I would note that the top end of that graph is actually $4.5 million in terms of that top 10th of 1% income versus the median at about $35,000 a year. So that is a huge disparity. And I think that part of where, you know, another sort of view of that is to look at this in terms of where Oregonians fall when you break out into those 20% segments or quintiles. We understand that even though Oregon's tax system is more progressive than in some states, that does not really make it a progressive tax system. And in fact, we can see that it is a regressive tax system because those folks who have the lowest incomes are disproportionately paying in to support the services that are in the interest of all Oregonians. And I think, again, if you look at this from the perspective of one of those working class Oregonians, they understand that this is happening. They understand that they are not getting ahead at the same time that folks are saying, well, things are supposed to be getting better. What that led our group in the discussion of the roundtable to was, I think, an identification of what are the key principles? What tells us whether or not we're talking about a better set of tax policies than what we have under the current system? And the key principles that came down, I'll talk about these just in a second, but these are principles that originated with the roundtable, but have since been adopted also by the Oregon Revenue Coalition and the Invest in Oregon Coalition. Those are groups that have some overlapping membership, not the same membership, but I think there is a real unity of understanding that these principles can help us get to really good, much better than we have tax policy for the state of Oregon. You'll see these on two slides because there are essentially two tiers of these principles. One is what we refer to as essential principles. So progressivity, adequacy, equity, and viability. These get to kind of those fundamentals of a policy. And I should say, when we talk about progressivity, I alluded to this, that it is the folks who have the greatest capacity to support our shared services and shared vision need to be making a greater contribution than the folks who have less means. When we talk about adequacy, what we're talking about here is the relationship between the revenue that we're raising and the cost of doing business, the cost of the services that we've all agreed are in the interest of Oregonians. So in particular, a high-quality K-12 educational system is a shared value, a shared goal, and we need to have revenue that is adequate to support that. When we talk about equity, obviously we're talking about fairness amongst businesses, but I think there's an important other component to that lens, which is that not all communities in Oregon have been equally treated by our existing system, that there are additional barriers for some communities to realizing the benefits of where we may go with new tax policy, and we want to make sure that we are keeping that lens in mind so that we don't make things better for some Oregonians but leave out an important segment of our population. And finally, when we talk about viability, obviously we're talking about the viability of a proposal in the minds of Oregonians. It is important that if you're making significant changes to tax policy, there is broad agreement and broad support for making those changes. So we want to keep that as part of the lens here. In terms of preferred principles, I think these, to some degree, are intuitive, that we want to have a system that is as simple as it reasonably can be while still meeting those other principles, that we want revenue that is going to be stable over the long term. And of course, you're all familiar with one of the challenges under our current system. Stability is a serious issue. To get into a little bit of economist speak, we talked about horizontally fair as a principle, and what we're really talking about here is that issue of fair treatment of different types of business entities, that we're not creating a system that encourages people to make certain business decisions just because of our tax policy. And I think finally, and sort of related to that, is a neutrality principle, that we don't want to be, as much as is practical, in the business of picking winners and losers relative to the economy, that we want tax policy to be as fair as it can be while still meeting those essential principles on the first slide. So I think these are all important, but at the same time, to some degree, maybe give way a little bit to those essential principles that I just outlined. And I think the last thing to sort of wrap up my contribution here is to kind of bring into focus, why are we here? What's the relevancy of what we're talking about tonight to the conversations that you all have been having? And obviously there's a component here in looking at the current structure, being familiar with exactly what is and is not working out of our existing system, being able to talk as you have about potential new taxes, different ways of approaching things. But where I think we are able to add some value, hopefully, is the discussion that we had, which was focused on improvements to our existing tax structure. So less, improvements to our existing tax structure. I think that's an element that we can speak to based on the conversations that we all were having as a group over the last year.
Thanks, Bob. Co-Chairs Hassan Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Hauser. I am the lead for tax policy for the Oregon Center for Public Policy. Many of you already have heard from me about the Oregon Revenue Roundtable's proposals and principles, and I really appreciate the opportunity to bring this to the full committee so we can have a good, hopefully robust discussion and question and answers on the proposals we're going to put forward. For the Oregon Center for Public Policy, we care very deeply about economic opportunity and ensuring that all low and middle income Oregonians have the same opportunities that others have. When we think about tax policy, it often sometimes gets lost that this is really the bedrock of why we have the great school system, why we have services that support people who can't stay in a stable home or assist people who need help affording dinner, for example. So I want to be very clear, just as I jump into some of the actual proposals, that none of these proposals on their own are anything loosely resembling the solution, right? It needs to be a package that considers some of the proposals you all have already been discussing, as Bob illustrated earlier, around a value-added tax, a gross receipts tax, and some of those other considerations. We think that many of these options actually fit in nicely along with some of those proposals that have been brought forward that will improve our existing corporate income tax system or our corporate minimum, as well as pairing nicely with the other conversations that are underway. And we also are not laying out this series of options by saying that this is a package, right? That this is a series of four things that you throw into a bill and pass tomorrow. That's not what we're bringing forward. We hope instead that these are options that add to the discussion and the work that this subcommittee has to go through to develop what is really a robust and strong package that abides by the principles that we've laid out and that many of which you all have already discussed. So the first option we identified here is to increase the corporate income tax rate. This is the tax assessed on the profits, the net income of a C corporation, and only a C corporation. The first part on the top of the current you'll see is what we currently tax C corporations on their profits. Proposal one, just below, would increase the lowest bracket 1 percentage point from 6.6 to 7.6%. It would then bump up the current second bracket to go from 1 million to 10 million at 9.6%. And finally, it would add an additional bracket for profits over $10 million in a single year of 11%. The second proposal would simply match, and this will need to be updated with new tax years depending on where you want to draw the lines. But what it does is it matches the corporate income tax structure to the personal income tax structure. And so the goal here being that, as one of the roundtable participants noted, if corporations are people, let's tax them similarly to how people are taxed in Oregon. So those are both options that would expand upon and improve, we feel, the corporate income tax rate structure that's currently in place. And it's worth noting the little blue boxes there on the side are revenue estimates of what this would raise over a full, complete two-year period. I don't want to confuse that with what they will raise in the 1921 biennium. There's obviously wrinkles around implementation and the changing of the economy. And obviously, we would want Chris and Legislative Revenue Office to put forward updated figures.
I just want to ask, how these apply?
Okay. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a question.
Yes, thank you.
I don't want to interrupt your flow. I just want to quickly pause. So on Proposal 2, I just want to make sure I understand it. So would that be the rates on So this is income tax side, so this would be on profits. So if your profits were 0 to 7,000, 6,900 to 17,6, okay. So which is a much different, so that basically, do you see how that is there?
I do, yeah. We were not intending to tax $100 from 6,900 to 7,000 twice.
That's.
I think that was a matter of updating only some of the cells with the new tax year's personal income tax data.
Gotcha. But that's just, that's such a different set of ranges than the current that I just wanted to clarify that indeed it is that way on purpose.
Yes, okay, yeah. Representative Smith Warner chairs. That is the case.
It
would, in some ways, shift the taxes farther down to C corporations with lower profits while still hitting a rather significant revenue impact.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the second option that we want to encourage this group to consider is to improve and expand upon Oregon's existing gross receipts tax, the corporate minimum tax. This, of course, being a, I sort of call it a poorly designed gross receipts tax. Instead of having a consistent rate that's applied across businesses after some threshold, what it is today is 12 brackets that all have flat minimum taxes. We would suggest that Oregon could instead shift our corporate minimum tax to be a true gross receipts tax in the sense that it just applies a set rate after you get past that $0 to $500,000 in business sales, that beyond that rate or beyond that threshold, a rate would be applied to those C corporations' sales and their receipts, not their profits. And you can see here that as you've all probably already understand that you can raise a lot of money with gross receipts tax and through the corporate minimum. In this instance, proposal one at 0.3% raises about $650 million a biennium, while option two raises over $1 billion with a 0.45% rate. And that's in our corporate minimum. So the next set of changes that I would like folks to consider and think about as they relate to the other options is to expand the tax base. So we already talked about corporate income taxes and the corporate minimum tax. We can also expand the corporate tax base that is taxed by both of those taxes. So I'll only include comments on two of the proposals here. There are others in the roundtable document that should also be, you know, I think, considered, and that's also on OLIS for folks that want to dig into it, and I'm happy to answer any questions on those other options. But I will say that here are two, one for the corporate income tax, one for the corporate minimum tax, that would expand the tax base. So the first is complete reporting. This is a policy change that would include in the taxable income for a multinational corporation some of their global business activities. We expect that this would raise, I mean, our estimates in working with national partners put it between $300 and $400 million a biennium. Although, to be completely honest, some of the challenges with this proposal is we don't actually have all of the data we need to fully understand how much revenues raise. What we are fairly confident on is that it will raise quite a bit of money. We know that the sign on it is positive, right? We're fairly confident that it will raise money in quite a bit. The question is quite how big the magnitude is. And so we've worked with, like I mentioned, with a number of national partners and experts in the field of multinational corporate taxation to try and understand the magnitude, and we think it'd be around $300 to $400 million. I'll also note that this is one of those very few taxes that really does tax the guy behind the tree. This is something that will be largely paid for by out-of-state and foreign investors. And because of that, only about, we estimate that $1 in $10 of this tax would actually land on Oregonians. And of that, the majority would fall on the richest Oregonians, those who have significant holdings in multinational corporations. The second option here is to expand the corporate minimum to more businesses. So this is in reference to some of the comments that have happened to this, or that have been in front of this committee earlier around flyover businesses. One of the things that we can do under existing, or we believe we can do under existing law, is to include more businesses in the corporate minimum who sell tangible personal property into Oregon, but don't currently have nexus as it relates to our corporate income tax. And so based on recent Supreme Court decisions and other analysis of the law, we feel like this committee and others should consider whether or not we can include more of those businesses in our existing corporate minimum that don't currently pay taxes today. The reason we don't have a revenue estimate for this one is they're not paying Oregon's corporate income taxes today. We don't know how many of these businesses there are. What we do know is that the only way that this would impact revenues is by adding businesses. There's really no way that this could reduce businesses who would be taxed in Oregon. So the final item I want to highlight kind of goes past, the last ones were really focused on C corporations, right? And corporate taxes assessed on C corporations. But as has been discussed many a time for all of you in many of your revenue committee meetings, we also have pass-through businesses. And Oregon's pass-through businesses receive a significant reduction in the rates assessed on their first $5 million in profits for each business owner. That adds up to a couple $100 million each budget period. I know that the tax expenditure report listed it as $302 million each budget period. I believe that LRO might have some newer data that might put that at a little bit lower, but however you cut it, this is a policy that puts hundreds of millions of dollars outside of the budget and instead subsidizes the profits of pass-through business owners. What Oregon could do with this policy is either eliminate or scale it back. The roundtable wasn't able to achieve consensus on which of those two, but scaling it back in a way that only the first $100,000, let's say, in profits receive some sort of reduced rate is something that this committee should also consider. It's important that we not just focus on C corporations with this change. As we've discussed, taxing business structures more equitably is something that would be positive. And so this is one of the ways to help ensure that pass-through businesses are also a part of contributing to our increased revenues. So to close, I really just want to emphasize for this committee, for the subcommittee, the principles again. For us, that is the most important thing to take away from this, that whatever package does end up coming forward and does end up being analyzed by LRO with OTEM and otherwise, as well as the many advocates that have been around the Oregon Revenue Roundtable, that it be progressive, that it be adequate, that it be viable, and that it be equitable. And I hope that some of the options that we've provided today on how we can expand and improve upon our corporate income tax system can be used and considered along with some of the other ideas put forward in front of this group to really put together a package that does meet those principles. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to present.
Thank you. Questions? Yes.
Dan, on the improved corporate minimum tax, those are just to C corporations.
That would be, although...
So wouldn't that be a little one-sided?
Travis, sorry, yeah. You want to finish?
That was your intent, though, right? Just on C-Corps?
That is the intent of that bullet point, Chair Haas, Co-Chair Nathanson. I think that we didn't discuss as a roundtable whether or not extending the corporate minimum to S corporations or otherwise extending the corporate minimum would be the right path to pursue. Although I think it's something that if we analyze that question as well based on the principles, it might be the right thing to do as well.
Follow up?
Yes.
If you have these gross receipts tax rates as corporate minimums, what is the advantage? And what is the advantage of doing it that way versus just a regular gross receipts tax rate, like Washington, Ohio, whatever? Is there an advantage to doing it that way, other than you pull in the non-C corps, the S corps?
Chair Haas, Chair Nathanson, there are a number of considerations on whether or not the corporate minimum versus a standalone gross receipts tax would be more or less effective. I think that by doing it through the corporate minimum, we're increasing the level or at least the scale at which the revenue is being raised from C corporations, which are more likely to be larger multinational corporations that can spread those tax increases across their business activities in many states and many nations. As we look towards the goal of having a progressive tax that truly does a good job of protecting the prices paid by working families, having a tax that is more so targeted on the biggest and widest spread businesses reduces the likelihood that it'll impact prices for Oregonians.
Okay. Follow up. If you did this, just the corporate minimum tax like you have on the table, wouldn't we be pressuring companies to refile and set up as an S corp or get out of the C corp filing that they have to reorganize? Wouldn't that create a huge incentive to change behavior as opposed to broaden our tax base?
Chair Haas, Chair Nathanson, I think it's important to consider how these businesses make those decisions. I think if you want to be a public corporation, you want a significant level of investors, you want foreign investors, the decision on how to incorporate is going to be more so driven by those investment decisions, I would imagine, more so than whether or not you might be able to save a little bit on your Oregon corporate income taxes, particularly for these larger corporations that are in many states. The decision of and have the federal corporate income taxes, the decision of how to incorporate is going to depend, I expect, much less on simply how Oregon is taxing your business than the amalgamation of all the states and all the jurisdictions and the federal. But I will say that I don't think the roundtable in any way weighed in on whether or not we shouldn't expand our minimum to S corporations, or whether or not we shouldn't consider how our corporate minimum and a gross receipts tax can be better built. You know, I think these are proposals to improve the system we have today. They aren't by any means the final answer on how this taxes should be raised.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. First of all, thank you, sir, for coming and visiting my office. I really, really appreciate the conversation, and I hope you'll continue to visit my office as I learn about potential revenue ideas. As I review those 4 points of progressive and adequate and viable and equitable, I wonder if we're missing a couple that ought to be considered. As the vice chair of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, I wonder if we ought to add, and also stable. One of the biggest issues we have in the state of Oregon is an income tax structure that is feast or fathom.
Famine.
Feast or
famine.
Famine. Thank you. It's been a long day. Feast or famine for our folks down in Ways and Means. And so I wonder if that ought to be a guiding principle. The other one is, it occurs to me that we spend hundreds of millions of dollars on Business Oregon, trying to recruit business and industry into the state. And I wonder if one of our guiding principles ought to be one that attracts talent to the state of Oregon, and a guiding principle of trying to assist in business recruitment that's in line with Oregon values. Did the Oregon Revenue Roundtable have any consideration of stability, attracting talent, or recruitment?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Smith, so on one of the slides that I spoke to, we did mention stability as being a principle that does need to be considered. It was not in our sort of highest tier of principles, but certainly you are right, it should be part of the conversation. In terms of recruitment and how that could be sort of identified as a principle, I think I'm going to defer to my colleague from the Main Street Alliance on that one.
Co-chairs, Representative Smith. So small business owners actually really rely on being able to recruit talented, skilled workers, especially, I mean, Oregon is in a unique place with the lowest corporate income tax. We're not currently, we don't have paid family and medical leave where we can get, you know, talented folks to come from other states to work for us, especially in small businesses, right? Because big corporations can spread their wealth out and don't need to rely on those sorts of things to have skilled workers, at least theoretically, right? So we believe that, like, robust investment in our education system is the way to attract skilled workers.
Yeah, just as a follow-up, I don't disagree with any of that.
Yeah.
And I want to see more revenue go towards education. What I'm trying to get at is can the Oregon Revenue Roundtable group, the folks who are participating in that, bring forward ideas to us of strategies or concepts or ideas that would achieve those basic principles, those preferred principles, but also be used as a tool to attract talent into the state, to attract those corporations that meet Oregon values into the state, and have that as one of our essential principles as well.
Daniel?
We spent quite a, well, Representative Smith, co-chairs Hassan-Nathanson, we spent quite a bit of time debating where to situate and how to prioritize the principles. I think one of the things that we realized was it would be better for the state of Oregon to have a revenue system that's adequate occasionally than one that's never adequate, but is stable in its inadequacy. It certainly is the case that we would love to have a stable revenue system, right? and not cutting services or growing services every other budget period because we have a volatile tax system would also help with the predictability for businesses as well as for folks that are trying to decide where to house their family and where to live. I think that the reason we emphasize these as the highest priority principles is because if we have a tax system that is adequately funding our education, that does an outstanding and remarkable job relative to our other states in the nation at really helping those among us who need the greatest help and really ensuring that racial equity is being prioritized as something to target and to fight against, and that even in our tax code as well as through our budget, we can be making a really significant difference in that, that we will have an easier job recruiting talent than if we simply put together new subsidies or had some other way of trying to attract businesses or their talent.
So. Thank you.
Representative Smith-Warren.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Would you go back to your, go forward to your last slide so that I can give you the compliment that I wanted to give you? I want to say, first of all, thank you for whoever rearranged those for us, that they now spell an acronym of PAVE.
look at that. Good catch.
Because I actually did that in my notes when they came up on the first slide. I put little arrows to move them around, and then there it was, like you read my mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. We're really hoping it'll pave the way for this committee to successfully raise revenue.
That's what I'm looking for. Pave the way for better. I mean, I'm right, like, I wrote it down already. So thank you for that. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about complete reporting. Because this, you know, is that we've had conversations about this, whether it was what we used to have in the revenue system before the last big tax change at the federal level, with our tax havens legislation. Could you kind of talk about that and walk us through again how that has the impact? Because I know it it would be an increase, but I'm trying to wrap my mind around the old, like, when the numerator gets bigger, but the denominator, see, I'm not even doing them on the right side of the line, but how that impacts it. Would perhaps Daniel or anyone else, I'm thinking it might be Daniel, yeah.
Thank you for that question, Representative Smith-Warner.
You're welcome.
Co-chairs. Complete reporting is a way of including, as I said, business activity explicitly and only for multinational corporations. Right? You have to have foreign subsidiaries for this policy to impact you in some way. What the change would do relative to what we used to have, right? So right now, your taxable income in Oregon is the federal consolidated return. And our tax haven policy said, income in these countries we're going to bring into the taxable income. Instead of picking and choosing winners and losers and falling into a trap where we have the, I don't know, Irish finance minister in your offices, we felt like, for a number of reasons, but one of those was that where tax havens are located and where there's opportunities for corporations to plan how to avoid taxes and to reduce their tax burden, what those countries are going to change year over year, and it's frequently going to be shifting around. So rather than trying to set up a policy where we're only bringing in additional profits, what if we set it up in a way that we consider where sales are occurring globally as well as where profits are occurring globally? So some corporations that might be, for example, using Oregon as a tax haven, which I hear is a lucrative trade, I don't know, they might see a smaller tax, right? It's theoretically possible that someone who is using Oregon as a tax haven could see a reduction in their corporate taxes. Someone who's selling a very large quantity of things in another country, but it has very few profits booked there. They're instead booking them in Oregon. It's possible that they then would see a reduction in their tax. What we expect and what we believe based on our work and that of some of our partners is that, in fact, it's actually other countries based in very low tax areas, including many islands in the Atlantic, that is where many of the profits are being booked, even if they have very few employees, if any at all. And so a change to complete reporting would be a way of addressing that practice. Now, as I mentioned earlier in response to Senator Hass's question, businesses aren't necessarily making their investment decisions and their incorporation decisions purely based on their Oregon income tax. Right? They're making it based on many decisions and many factors. What complete reporting would do, however, would be to ensure that Oregon's getting our fair share of the investments that they're making, both in our state, of what they're selling into our state, and where they're booking those profits around the globe. And so I think it's something that it's kind of hard to explain simply, but hopefully this has helped get a little closer. We really feel that complete reporting is really a step further and a better version and an improved version of our old tax haven policy.
Thank you.
Chair, so if you can go back to your increase in corporate tax rate slide, And I want to build on Rep. Smith Warner's remark about the change in the brackets on those 250,000 that used to look at 6.6% on up to 1 million, another 9.9%. And just discuss, if you would, the impact that's going to have on capital accumulation, given the fact that they could keep it in the corporation and pay 9.9% or pay it out in salaries at 9.9%. So tell me what your thinking was there when it came to the purpose of the C-Corp, of course, is to accumulate capital, right, at the lowest possible rate so you can keep on using it, build your business. So the idea is to try to, for smaller businesses in particular, keep the money inside. That's what I want you guys to. So you must have talked about this. So share with me your thinking and why you decided to raise the tax as you did on these small businesses.
Okay. Senator Bentz. Vice Chair or co-chairs. One of the reasons that we outlined two potential rate changes was mainly to highlight the fact that we don't have a set clear proposal that is the unifying perfect one. I think it's absolutely the case that some variation on these two, some completely different means of raising significant revenue that compares to the over $300 million that either of these would be able to invest in our schools is a path that this committee should consider. With those considerations, the impacts on business decisions, on accumulation of capital, on how it might incentivize or disincentivize certain behaviors, be it holding on to or providing out dividends by a C corporation, are all considerations we hope you will also consider. But for us, it was important to just make the point, and hopefully a clear one, that were we to simply treat corporations as we do individuals through the income tax structure, that it could raise hundreds of millions of dollars.
Follow up. So this this concept of accumulation of capital is important because I think you started out your presentation on an income inequality discussion. I went back and looked at some of the work I've done on that issue because it's extremely important. And one of the things that's recommended by almost every economist in looking at this is to try to help small business because that's where you make more money as opposed to trying to have everybody earn a salary. Now, Oregon's approach to small business has been deplorable in many respects, in that it's imposed enormous costs on small business people, making it extraordinarily difficult to get in to, for anybody to be enthusiastic about getting into a small business. But I know you want to raise money for the purpose of education. I appreciate that, but I want to go back to this 250 and the 9.9%. Was there more to that than just the desire to raise more money? Was there, because what I would have thought, and I think I mentioned this in one of our first, I'm not sure I did, but of course, you have to look at this in the context of the federal rate, right? And the huge tax break that these corporations were given in the federal legislation recently passed, right? They got a break from, 36% down to, was it 21? And so I assumed what you would say to me is, hey, we did this because they got such a great break at the federal level, but I didn't hear you say that. Was that discussed? And if not, why not? But if so, share with us your thinking.
Co-chairs, Senator Bentz, I think that part of where this came from, I appreciate the analysis on accumulation of capital. I think that's a serious concern. I think part of how we ended up identifying the options that we have here was looking through the lens of the principles that we had all agreed to, what might that look like? So it isn't necessarily for us to say this is the path to, as I think Daniel said, this is not a silver bullet. This is not necessarily the way that we would hope that the committee would proceed. But I think looking through the lens of fairness, for example, one can make the argument that if these rates are appropriate on individual incomes, that it is fair to apply similar rates to business income. Of course, we can argue about that, but that was the idea that we were trying to illustrate here, that through that lens of fairness, one could certainly raise additional revenue, but also be able to say, look, this is fair from the perspective of if a working class Oregonian is paying 7 or 9%, or I should say is paying 9%, because the folks who are only paying 7% are a small number, that would not be unreasonable to ask of C corporations in Oregon.
I appreciate that thought. One of the principles, and I have the initial principles we started out with here, one of those principles, there's actually many of them, had been to, at least one of my principles had been to, as we try to do this, figure out a way of making this not punitive to business, not to suggest that because they're making more money they're somehow bad and they don't deserve it, but somehow to look at it and say, what can we do that will help make the whole situation better? What I thought I would see in your proposal was going to be a reduction in the income taxes that had been actually discussed earlier. So you had more of a, when we talked tax reform, we got to see that. Now, perhaps you were thinking that, that some of this $340 million was going to be used for that purpose.
Senator Benz, co-chairs. We really set out very much not to put forward a path to how to reform Oregon's revenue system to make it meet our principles exhaustively. Our focus was on how can we raise revenue in a way that abides by the principles. And so we had quite a bit of discussion about the dedication of funds, about how to either reduce the lowest personal income tax brackets, whether or not it would be better to increase our standard deduction personal exemption credit, whether or not it would be better to enhance Oregon's earned income tax credit, or also whether or not it would make the most sense to have a new targeted refundable tax credit that would really be focused on how to make the overall package one that's progressive. We did not, however, reach any sort of conclusion on that or really attempt to, because we made it fairly clear early on to all the folks engaged in this process that the goal of this document and of the revenue roundtable, as it was for the last 8 months, was focused on how to raise revenue in a way that meets these principles, not how to then spend it back out through the tax code.
Well, thank you for your indulgence. So I was doing some reading on issues of this nature the other day, and there was an extraordinarily interesting discussion of monopoly and why blue states in particular had been fortunate in the growing monopolization of business in America. And the author went back to events that occurred in the 80s under the Carter administration and then the Reagan administration to show that there had been a lax focus on antitrust law. The result then was a conglomeration of more and more monopolies and fewer small businesses. So when I look at this and I see the focus on small business and not necessarily on the higher end of things, I go, And what's happened is you can see it here in Oregon. I'm going to use Walmart as an example. Every small town has a Walmart in it, and about half the small businesses, if they're lucky, right? And we could talk about all the big businesses. Amazon comes to mind. The point, though, is wouldn't your tax policy want to focus upon that issue and not on small business? Did you guys discuss this in your roundtable?
Co-chair Senator Benz, I don't think that we disagree about the concerns about what's going on in the U.S. economy. I think in terms of where we were going and the reason that you will see more than just one particular option on each of these slides is an attempt to illustrate different possibilities of where the application of our shared principles could lead. So, for example, the proposal one on this slide was, if I recall correctly, I think numbers that I came up with as part of our discussion, not so much scientifically, but as an illustration of, well, that would be, you know, that would be more progressive than what we have now. It would be a direction that we could go consistent with our principles. We didn't necessarily take to every bit of analysis of each of the options that are here because we wanted to make sure that we were talking about a range of options.
I wanted to add something as well, if possible. Senator Bentz, thank you, co-chairs. So Main Street Alliance is, we're 4,000 small business owners across industry, across the state. And we went into this discussion and became part of this revenue roundtable with eyes wide open. We wanted to know from our members, who of you are C-Corps, who of you are S-Corps, sole proprietors, LLCs, what have you. And we have many members who maybe hardly take a paycheck themselves. And we have developers who made $1.2 million last year. We have a wide variety of folks. The majority have less than 15 employees, however, whatever they might be, whatever might be their tax structure, right? And what we found is that the majority of these actual real small business owners across industry and across geography were not C-Corps. They just were not, that was not their tax structure. So this particular proposal was just talking about C-Corps. We spent a lot of time finding out, how much did you make last year? We literally sat down with our board members across industry, across region, and said, how would these theoretically affect you? And so that's how we weighed in that way, and that was how our participation was used in the roundtable discussions.
Oh, Madam Chair, if I may, just one follow-up remark. You deserve all the credit in the world for sitting around and talking about taxes. I give you that, and I appreciate it. So, yay.
Co-chair, I don't want to jump out front of folks if you have more to your proposals. Did the roundtable have a conversation of what they anticipate how Oregonians would react to this? I would just preface to the committee, I have voted to raise taxes. I have voted to do it. Well, the record speaks for itself. And if I have an opportunity to put dollars into K through 12, I'm there. I'm looking at these proposals though, and there's quite a few of them, and it still doesn't get us to the total that our subcommittee or our committee needs to raise to accomplish the wish list of items that are being discussed. Was there any conversation among the roundtable of how Oregonians are going to react to a long list of increases?
Co-chairs, Representative Smith, there was a lot of conversation about that under the lens of our principle of viability, that it is important as part of any policy proposal to be thinking about, where does this take us? Are people going to get on board with this? I think you will see part of the reason that this document is a set of proposals that is not a neatly bound up package as it goes, is because it is difficult to reach a complete consensus on exactly how to do this. We were more so interested in being able to articulate some specific proposals that would be an opportunity for the legislature to use that as a starting point, to pick and choose, to ignore the whole thing, if that was the choice that you all made. But I think to your larger question of whether this gets us there or not, certainly that does depend on the particulars of each of these proposals. So the example of the corporate minimum, if you use that as the mechanic, depending on what rate you set, you can get relatively close to where you want to go. But I think you're right. I think it is certainly still a challenge to be grappled with, exactly what the combination of different taxes and what the specifics of those are in order to get to at least $2 billion net.
So I would just share, Madam Co-Chair, and again, I want to be really clear. I want to put more money into our classrooms, and I stand ready to try and figure that solution out. But if this is going to be viable, I'm of the opinion we need to be having a broader conversations with some of the folks who are hanging out towards the back of the walls back there. to get their take on this. I think if we all come together and we all reach some compromises, we may be able to achieve some objectives that get us where we need to be to put more money into education, and we may be able to assist business and industry in attracting talent and assist our state in the guiding principle of recruiting companies that meet our Oregon values. But I'm very nervous that if we rolled out this whole list, it would get a pretty big thud pretty quick. And so I think we need to all be working together on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? After this really good conversation, I have a very narrow question to ask. It's on complete reporting. I'm not aware how much you may have worked with legal experts or scholars on this, but I'm trying to envision whether complete reporting is viable, what other states' experience has been, and is this going to get us sideways with federal law?
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Haas. Many states, including Oregon, had a very similar version to what we're proposing of complete reporting prior to the mid-1980s. And so at that time, a number of Supreme Court cases that were challenges by corporations of the state's ability to tax that income went to the Supreme Court and were found in favor of the states. And so I think even more so than our tax haven law we used to have, complete reporting has robust case law and decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court that indicate that it would be legal.
Thank you. That's the end of our questions. Thank you all for being here and presenting this to us.
Thank you.
We have one other item. We have normally been ending our meetings around 6 o'clock, but there is some information that Mr. Alanak has prepared for us. Co-Chair Haas and I have asked to see some ideas in writing. What would it be if we did one or another type of mechanism? And I would like to emphasize to the committee and to those people who are watching that this is just meant to get a conversation started. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the co-chairs have picked, oh, it's going to be, you know, pick one of these things. That's not what this is for. It's a way of helping structure our discussion now. Well, what if you did this or that? There would be changes, of course. So please take it in that context. It's meant to help help stimulate our discussion as a committee. So, Mr. Allen.
Okay, Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. So just picking up from that point, the information that is on the screen there in this document entitled Preliminary Tax Plans is very preliminary. And the first block here are three different policy tools. And this is taken from the conversations over the past couple of weeks and some of the basic ideas that different groups have mentioned, as well as coming from discussions within the committee. The first one is a value-added tax, and just starting very simple, it would have a single rate, and the way it's calculated is similar to the OBI recommendation of calculating the value-added at a national level and then apportioning that value-added down to Oregon. That avoids some of the problems that the committee has discussed with a subnational VAT and having all of that calculated at the state level. This does a few things. It gets it to it converts a value-added tax base, which can also often be seen as an origin-based tax. It converts it to a destination-based tax by using the single sales factor or a single gross receipts factor, if you will. The key piece being the value-added is a national concept. And the single rate is, again, just for simplicity. And I'm still going through some calculations, but as we go through this, the tax base here is assumed to be about $100 billion.
Chris.
Mm-hmm.
When we, that would be just on a C Corp, right? Because of the need to do it from the national level? Yes, no?
No, well, the value added would be for all corporations, all businesses. Mm-hmm. You will have, to that point, you will have companies who apportion and don't apportion. So if all of your business activity is in Oregon, your apportionment is 100%. And that is one of the things to consider in a value-added tax, is that for businesses that operate in multiple states, this apportionment factor, just like we have for our C corporations now, if corporations operate in more than one state, their apportionment factor will be something less than 100%. But if they only operate in Oregon, then it would be 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
So that is a factor to keep in mind. The second item is, borrowing terminology from Ohio, it's a commercial activities tax, and that's similar to their receipts tax, and it would, again, be a single rate. And piggybacking on the Ohio tax, without getting overly complicated, again, for the simplistic purposes here, a couple of notes there under the details include, are it exempts petroleum. Part of that is with the goal being to fund education, anything on petroleum has to go to the highway fund. And then for purposes of these discussions, finance and insurance are included in this base. There may be some issues with that. And in fact, Ohio, those industries are taxed differently. But for purposes here, they are included because in our C corporation base, they do go through a calculation and determine Oregon sales. Mm-hmm. So that figure is included in this tax base. It's kind of it may be an odd concept, but again, just to start with the discussion here. So those are included. These are things to keep in mind. And as discussions progress, those were all those details will be modified. And the third category here is to work within the current system, and this is more or less taken from the discussion you just heard. And these policies are just focusing on the corporate income tax and the personal income tax. And the first one here is to match the corporate income tax rates to the personal income tax rates. And I have these down at 4.5 and 6.5 and 8.75 because one of the tables down below is a reduction in the personal income tax rates. So that's why the matching would be 4.5, 6.5, and 8.75 instead of 5.7 and 9. But that's very similar to the idea you just heard. Another corporate change would be to change the corporate minimum tax from the 12 steps to a 0.3% of Oregon sales, again, similar to what you just heard. And then another piece that you didn't hear tonight but had been discussed in the past is a reduction in the personal income tax structure and personal income tax rates for offsetting some of the costs as well as even some of the benefits to small businesses with that reduction on the personal income tax side. And so the 5.7 and 9 would be reduced to 4.5, 6.5, and 8.75. And again, these are just for illustrative purposes. So in some sense, those are the three basic building blocks that the committee has discussed over the past couple of weeks. So then the next step is to start with some kind of policy package. And there are four options here with three different revenue targets per year, whether that's $1 billion, $1.5 billion, or $2 billion. And the point of this is to give some sense of how the tax rates would change and how they differ across tax bases and how they would need to change with an increasing target. So option one, you have a value-added tax, and that rate would need to be about 1.27 to 1.77 to just under 2.3% if you're going for $1 billion to $1.5 to $3 billion. And then the personal income tax reduction would be as described in that table above. So one of the things to keep in mind, this would just be all new revenue to the existing system that we have. So it would be a new value-added tax and a reduction in the personal income tax. So some of the issues to consider with the value-added tax is that apportionment piece and the difference in treatment between Oregon-only companies and multi-state companies. You'd also have the mechanism of keeping the value-added tax while we're keeping the corporate income tax. And there we have the notion of the profits being taxed under both systems. The income tax taxes those profits directly at the tax rates. And within the value-added tax base, part of that is would be profits that would be included in that base. And then the second option.
So, Chris, I think I hear you're saying is if you're going to do the value-added and you subtract, for example, the cost of goods sold, and you're essentially paying tax on the income there, you couldn't also have an income tax, or you pay an income tax, so you'd have two income taxes. So it would be a little weird, to say the least, to have both of those. So does that figure to raise $1 billion a year factor in getting rid of the corporate income tax?
Co-Chair Hatz, it does not. This is the very simplest. This is just a new layer into that tax system and doesn't get into the interactions. And I mentioned that for some of the awkwardness that may present. Mm-hmm. As we've discussed, the value added, you have a pure value added, and then you have all of the puts and takes in creating that tax base. But in the sense where you have income that's in both of those, it does create an awkward dynamic where that income would be taxed twice.
So in all practicality, we wouldn't include the corporate income tax in that scenario, and therefore to get to $1 billion a year, that rate would have to be significantly higher.
Right. If you pull that out, then those have to be maybe double or a little bit more.
Okay, thank you.
So the second option is, again, these are just new taxes or new policies added on to our current structure. So you have a commercial activities tax of a rate of 0.48 to get $1 billion, and then it would increase to about 0.85 to get $2 billion per year, married with that same personal income tax. So part of the revenue raised here is spent, if you will, in reducing personal income taxes. And this too would be just a new tax for all businesses at the gross receipts rate. Now options 3 and 4 go back to a value added and a commercial activities and buy down those rates by incorporating other changes just on the corporate side. So on option 3, you have the value added as in option 1, and you have the personal income tax changes as in option 1. But in addition, there's an increase in the corporate minimum tax. So with a fixed target of $1 billion to $2 billion per year, that value added rate is reduced. For the $1 billion target, it's reduced from 1.27% to 0.95%. And the reason for that is part of that revenue gain is now coming from a new corporate minimum tax.
But we still would have the issue of the potential issue of taxing income twice that we had not backed out of this.
Right. Okay. And so part of, in trying to come up with examples of how these pieces might fit together, the reason I chose the corporate minimum tax at a 0.3% rate is that that's kind of a gross receipts tax, rather than doubling down on increasing the corporate minimum tax and that interaction with the value-added tax. And in option 4, the starting point is the commercial activities tax and the personal income tax. And in this case, the buying down of the commercial activities tax rate is achieved by increasing the income tax rates on the corporations. And in this case, the $1 billion per year target can be reduced from 0.48% down to 0.41%, give or take, due to the increase in the corporate income tax rates. So the idea here is just to move the discussion a little bit forward of how pieces of the puzzle might fit together for a new tax system. And these are just new taxes. It's not taking away the corporate income tax. So that's something to consider on how the value-added tax might interact with, how these new taxes might interact with the existing tax bases.
Um, food for thought. Are there questions that the committee has to clarify or amplify on what this is, or do you just would you like to just mull it over for a day or two until our next meeting?
Madam Chair, I think that this will progress at our next meeting. My hope is we'll have some models to look at with real numbers and real rates and see how hypothetical businesses will be hit or not hit, and how rates will be lowered on the personal side, and who wins, who loses. Mostly it's who's winning. But so that's what we'll model on Thursday.
Anything else?
I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, so consistent with conversations we've had in the past, I'm looking forward to the modeling. It's going to be challenging to view this in a vacuum, at least for me. So we're going to have to look at it in the context, of course, I hope, of other discussions that are ongoing that have to do with imposing other costs on our commercial activities in this state. So it's going to be difficult to view this in a silo. So you might want to be prepared for questions regarding the impact other activities we might have going on in this building this session would have on our ability to make this happen without the people of Oregon choosing to question it.
Any other comments? Our work is done for tonight. Thank you all. We're adjourned.
Thanks.